This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omised, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omised.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Well, it just so happened the name of this song is Psychotic Reaction. We didn't do it on purpose, but we're going to talk to Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, author of The New Rules of Attachment and Stop Self-Sabotage, mother of Luca, 5'7" of brains and beauty and brawn, and a mother of Luca. And I don't know, I'm running out of things to say here. Dr. Judy, how you doing?
We're laughing.
I know. Hey, Luca asked why we're laughing.
Let's say hi to Tommy. Say hi, Tommy.
Hey, Luca. How you doing, buddy?
He's good. He just woke up. He's a little sleepy. You know, can't give toddlers coffee yet. So,
no. Well,
I am enjoying coffee, but yeah, no, I don't want to give this kid coffee. He's so hyper already.
You'd be sorry. Then again, you can always offset with some cough syrup. I'm just kidding. You don't ever want to do that. Let's talk about, I wanted to, you know, we're going to talk about burnout, but earlier we had somebody on talking about scams and romance scams online and so forth. And I just thought it'd be interesting to ask you about when it comes to dating and appropriateness of money and warning signs when somebody asks you for money, how do you navigate that whole thing? If you got a relationship with somebody, unless you're married or something or sharing funds, I don't know how you handle all of that. Take me through that. You're the licensed clinical neuropsychologist.
Yes, it's so hard. I think that it's very, very hard to navigate. And I think most people would probably agree it's not a good idea to get entangled in finances and loaning, borrowing from friends and family members as much as you can avoid it, only because it tends to cause a lot of friction. Oftentimes it ends in resentment. So I think you just have to have a really clear boundary. Like, what is your financial boundary? Are you willing to help somebody out up to a certain amount? You know, are you just not willing to loan anyone money ever? Kind of have a clear vision in your head, because at some point you'll probably be asked, you know, and so it's just good to know. I know some people, and I think I myself am included in that, I'm more comfortable for sure loaning money to people than I am asking people for money. Mm-hmm. But the problem is sometimes when I loan people money, it's really awkward when I have to ask for it back. So if you think that you're going to be that person and it's going to be hard for you to get your money back, then you might just have to reshift it in your mind. Like, let's say that somebody wants to loan $500 from you and it's a really close family member or a good friend. If you're that person, you may just have to say, okay, it's almost as if I'm not going to get this money back. It's like I'm giving them a gift. And if I never get it back, then I'm okay with it. You know, so you just have to decide what you're truly okay with, what you're not, because I've seen this really tear apart families and friendships.
Let me, I want to open that Open Heart Jeweler Talk and Text line here at 504-260-1870. Let me know if anybody's either asked you for money, a friend or relative, or if you've asked to borrow money, because I'm thinking, Dr. Judy, I don't know that anybody's ever asked me to borrow money.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe they knew the answer was no, or they knew I'm always broke. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know.
Maybe they're like, he's not going to give us any money. I can tell.
Right. But generally speaking, when it comes to a relationship, if you're starting to date somebody, if they ask you for money, that should be a big warning time, should it not?
I do think so. Yeah, I do think so. And I think that you don't want to be a sucker, right? So maybe it's just that you, Tommy, you just wear your boundaries, you know, more clearly. Some people just kind of look like, oh, well, you know, sure, I'll be a pushover. I'll give it to you. You know, maybe you're just not that person. People ask you for other things, but not for actual money for that reason. And I think that sometimes when you're in an early dating relationship and that conversation goes right to borrowing money, of course, that's a warning sign. It doesn't matter how much money you have or how little. The fact that they're already making it transactional at such an early stage, I don't think that that's necessarily a good roadmap for a long-lasting, loving relationship, because you would hope that this person has other people in their life who they have more solidified relationships with, whether it's family members, good friends, or very good colleagues, where if they were in a pinch, they'd be asking those individuals because that relationship is much more established.
You know, somebody texted...
So I do think that's a sign.
Somebody texted this in, and I think it's a good point that you should never, ever begin dating anybody with serious credit problems because inevitably, or serious debt, because inevitably it is going to come back and affect the relationship. Thoughts?
I feel like obviously you have to make sure you don't make too many lists of no's before you even give the relationship a chance. But if you do learn that the person has a lot of financial debt, I mean, that means that you probably have to bump up the timeline for when you're going to have that conversation about financial values, right? Because for a relationship to work, you have to have similar values in a lot of different ways, whether it's about family, how you spend your time, you know, all of those things are important to talk about. You know, sometimes for people, religion and spiritual beliefs, that's important to discuss. But the financial discussion is always awkward and people delay it a lot. But eventually, it's going to cause friction. And if you know that they're in debt or you see the way that they spend your concerns, you might have to have that conversation a little earlier so that you really understand the full picture and whether or not you can get on the same page eventually. I mean, if this is a person who's saying, look, I've made some dumb decisions in my youth. I'm trying to get, you know, financially solvent now. If they have a clear plan, I think that that's fine. You know, you can talk through that. You might have to stay on top of them a little bit. But they're continuing to spend money, being really just reckless with it. I do think that if you guys end up in a long-term relationship, you will have to assume that financial responsibility sooner or later. And I know that one of my best friends, you know, him and his spouse, they both went to grad school. He was able to keep his financial loans to a minimum, but hers was actually very high. It was a six-digit number. And he didn't realize that until they got married. And that did cause resentment in the relationship for at least a few months, because now him making all these responsible financial decisions, now it was his job to get both of them out of debt because now they're married. And, you know, he's the only one who was able to do it out of the two of them. And he didn't learn that until after they got married. Right. So just have that conversation early so you know what you're getting into.
Let me take a break. We'll come back, talk about burnout. And you can ponder this during the break. I've been divorced 12 years. At no point did anybody ever say, you know what, Tommy, you'd be perfect for, or you know what, Tommy would be perfect for you. 938, 22 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL. We are always concerned about mental health here, so we, every couple of weeks, talk to Dr. Judy Ho, our friend, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Dr. Judy, this study says that nearly a third of Americans felt burnt out at their job in the past year. How do you describe, that's not a clinical diagnosis, right? Burnout, or is it?
Yeah, burnout is not a clinical diagnosis, but it overlaps with other diagnoses, especially depression. So sometimes people have a difficult time determining if it's just burnout or if they're also then slipping into maybe a clinical depression. But either way, what we know is that chronic burnout has a lot of deleterious mental health and physical health effects. And so essentially, if you have chronic burnout, you are going to increase your risk to a host of medical and psychological concerns, which is why it's so important to notice it and address it.
Is it inevitable, burnout?
I don't think it's inevitable, but I do think that it's very common. So depending on the research that you look at, it looks like about 3/4 of Americans who are working, because we're talking about occupational burnout, at some point will say that they have been burned out some of the time or most of the time. So that's a big statistic, right? It's basically 3 out of 4 people are going to experience this, not just a few days a week from time to time. They're either going to feel like, well, probably half the time I'm feeling burnt out, or most of the time I am. And that, I think, is a really big statistic to pay attention to.
Maybe I'm old school here, but I always, you know, and I told my kid the same thing. It's like, well, you know, if it's fun.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun, you pay them to do it, right? But if they pay you, well, then it's going to be a grind. And I don't care what you do, if you're Patrick Mahomes or if you're Tiger Woods or if you're Florence Pugh, I don't know, give me an actress, anybody, no matter what you do, what do you do, Dr. Judy? No matter what you do, at some point it becomes a grind. Don't you have those days?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love my job overall, but it's called a job for a reason. I think that's what you were implying.
Right.
And I think that you have to have expectations that, oh my goodness, Luca is yawning at our conversation. He's like, oh, this is a bore. I don't have to work. But yeah, I think that
get ready, buddy. Your time's coming.
Exactly. Enjoy these years. But, you know, I think that maybe especially the younger generation, at least just from what I'm observing, of course, this is great that you want to hope for a career that is inspiring, that you love. But I think that sometimes that sentiment goes overboard and people start getting really disillusioned because they think that they're supposed to love their job all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that if the expectations were set in such a way that, hey, you know what, I do enjoy what I do, but there's going to be days or certain activities that I have to do as part of my job that I don't enjoy doing. If you can just set your expectations in a more realistic place, I actually think that that's one of the secrets to reducing burnout, because burnout has 3 main components. One is emotional exhaustion, like just feeling like no matter how much rest, how much sleep you actually get, you just feel tired. Another one is feeling like you're not as good at your job, even if people are telling you you're good, you just don't feel like you're being very effective. And then the third one, which I think in some ways can be the most insidious one that people don't notice, is that you start to have this really cynical way of looking at your job, your life, the people that you're working with, and you just start to distance yourself from empathy and from really connecting. And I think that that's the one that is the most gradual that people don't see, but it has some of the worst side effects. And I think that people tend to feel that way when they start to think, well, this job is supposed to be fun all the time. Why is it not always fun? And then you just start distancing yourself from all the goals that you set. And I think that that's just an important thing to realize, is that no matter what amazing job that you're calling, there's going to be some people you don't like dealing with, some parts of the job that you don't like, and that's so normal.
Somebody texted in about having a grown child that's in the 20s, having a hard time deciding what they want to do, and is there a way to go through a discernment process that would prevent possible burnout, and how do you help counsel somebody or advise them as to what their, I don't know if I'm use the word vocation, or what it is that they're determining what they want to do in life or what they're meant to do, or how do you go about that? Because you got to balance it with, you know, you got to enjoy it, but you still got to be able to provide for yourself and your family as well.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I would say that it's really helpful to take some established career inventories or personality tests to try to help them to know what their interests are and where their skills are. So a couple of the most famous ones that are used all the time that anyone can have access to, I mean, of course, you have to pay on the website to take the inventory, and then they give you essentially a breakdown and analysis as well as job descriptions and suggestions for which jobs you might be the most interested in or your skills would be the best equipped to. One of the most famous ones is called the Strong Interest Inventory. Again, anyone can get access. You can just search it in Google. Another one is called the Kierzy assessment that also helps you to understand how your personality traits might contribute to certain types of work environments. So Kierzy is spelled K-E-I-R-S-E-Y. I think those two things are great. You know, I would also say that, as we were just talking about, Tommy, especially the younger generation, they're having a harder time with this discernment process. I feel like the older generation is just like, well, you got to get a job and you got to work and put food on the table. And then gradually now it's like, well, I don't want to commit to a job until I feel like it's absolutely the right one for me. And guess what? You're not going to feel like that probably with your first or second or third or even your fifth job, right? The whole point is just to dig in, find out what you like and don't like, get experience, meet people, make connections, and then go to your next job. So it's okay if that first step isn't going to be your forever step. But I think that sometimes people get decision paralysis, like I'm supposed to find my calling right now. And then, of course, in this day and age, there's a lot of different other jobs that just weren't open to us before, like YouTube creator. Mm-hmm. Like that wasn't a thing when I was younger. So people are sometimes also thinking, well, maybe I can skip a couple steps and just achieve internet fame. And that also takes away from their ability to just say, just got to do a little bit of the grind, just dip your toe in, see if you like it. If you don't, move on. And that's totally normal to be feeling like that and in their 20s. But if these tools might assist the strong and the Kierzy, then definitely check those out. And you can use those when you're older too. You know, if you're like kind of thinking about a second career, or maybe you're moving into retirement, and you're like, oh, what kind of hobbies should I take on? Those are good assessments for that too.
I am, and I've said this often, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I want to do this job till I die. It's what I've always wanted to do. And I was blessed and fortunate and lucky enough to have it and to get it and to hold on to it. But have there ever been studies done about how many people, when all is said and done, when they get to retirement age or whatever, that they look back with regret or they look back with satisfaction?
Yeah, that's just such a good question. I'm going to look up to see if there's any recent studies on that and get back to you. But, you know, I think that
anecdotally,
it's actually higher than you think.
I was going to say anecdotally.
I would say that the number is higher than you think. I think that sometimes people think, oh, well, if I look back, I'm going to have all these things that I wish I had done instead. But I think that from what I hear and from what I see, most people have a lot about their lives that they can look back that they're satisfied by. It might not be career, right? It might be something else. It might be that they're satisfied about how they spent their time on the weekends or how they were with their family or how they pursued their hobbies. But I think that more people than you would think are satisfied with how they chose to spend their lives and who they spent it with.
All right, they're getting up and we're getting ready to walk out of church. Leave them with a thought, Dr. Judy, of if you're feeling burned out, what can you do to make it better? Deal with it.
Make sure that you do self-care every single day in some way, as long as it's intentional and that you know it's something that you're doing just for yourself. Even something that's 5 or 10 minutes is helpful and important. So that's what I would say, is make sure to prioritize that. Self-care is essential for your mental and physical health. It's not a luxury.
Thank you, Dr. Judy. Have a great day, you and Luca. And you can have Luca go at, how old is he now?
He's 3.
3. He can go take that strong interest inventory or the Kierzy assessment. Let me know how it turns out.
Exactly. Put him to work. Thanks, Tommy.
Thank
you.
Talk
to you soon.
You bet. Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.